My name is Tim Hansen, and this is the Out in the Open conversation about gay and lesbian issues. It's a conversation and not a session. There's a difference between the two of those. I'm not going to be doing a presentation. I'm not going to be the one speaking all the time. I'll have plenty of things to say, and we'll throw in my two cents when I get a chance. But really want this to be a dialogue amongst those everyone that's gathered here. Want to just be very open and very clear that we want everyone to feel welcomed here. And to make an interesting conversation, we need everyone to feel comfortable expressing their thoughts and their views. And even though it's Lutheran, it's okay if we don't agree. I think that we move and we learn from one another when we feel safe with one another and expressing our thoughts and our ideas, even if they may not be in line with what you think the person sitting next to you is thinking. But this is a safe place, and you're welcome to ask questions and to have a dialogue that perhaps you wouldn't have in other places. And to remember that these folks that are gathered here are also available for conversation. This isn't, when we're finished at 5 o'clock or at 4:45 or whenever we wind up, isn't the end. It's really just the beginning of continuing the conversation and being able to express our thoughts and our ideas. Okay. And we'll welcome people in as they come in also. That was perfectly timed. I was just saying how we were going to welcome folks as they walk in the door. Get to welcome you.
You have to share what you bring.
I have put out a number of different materials. I think it's important for folks to know what's available here at Holden Village. On the table on that side of the room are all of the different books that are for sale in the Holden bookstore. So you can browse and take a look at those. There's a section in the back sort of corner. You'll find out where it's at in the bookstore. Lots of wonderful, wonderful books. Over on this table, I've laid out a bunch of information that is kept in the Resource Center. And you're welcome to go in there and to take a look at that material. If there's things that you want to make copies of, you can use the copy machine up in the administrative offices on the second floor. But there's a number of different newsletters and pamphlets and brochures and a lot of really good information that's available. It's kept in the Resource Center, and there's the brown sort of folder thing that says gay lesbian issues, and everything is sort of right around that. Finally, I point out that there are a number of books in the library that you can check out during your stay here, and there are a number of tapes available in the Tape Ministry Library. I've just grabbed a handful of them and brought them out. By a couple of people that you may recognize their names. Dan Spencer and Anita Hill are two folks that have spoken a lot here in the village in the past years. So they have a number of different tapes. So know that this is Holden is a place to sort of sit back and think and to explore and talk about different things. I also want to make myself available to anyone during your stay here to pull me aside and have any sort of conversation with me that you'd like, ask questions. And I always enjoy engaging in conversation with folks while they're here too. So I think the technique that we'll use, the group is different every time. Just never know. Sometimes it's 3 or 4 people, sometimes it's 40 people. But today this seems like a pretty manageable size group, so I think the technique we'll use is to just simply go around the circle and give you a chance to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your exposure to the gay and lesbian issues, whether they're personally experienced with gay and lesbian issues or family members or friends, maybe where your church is at, questions that you've had, readings that you've done, just sort of give us a feel for maybe where you're at and what part in the conversation you might be able to take part in. Anyone is welcome to pass, and so feel like you're pressured to speak. And once we go around in the circle, then we'll just sort of open it up and see if we can learn from one another and connect some folks and some conversations and see where you're all at. So I'll start by introducing myself again. My name is Tim Hansen, and I've been here at Holden Village for about 2.5 years. I serve the village as fire chief and also do special events and entertainment sort of type things.
And auctions.
What's that?
And auctions.
And auctions, right. That falls under those special events, I guess. Before coming to Holden, I lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for 7 years, where I was a social worker, first working with people coming out of prison, and then I worked with the homeless population for about 6 years in Milwaukee. And got a little bit tired after a while and needed to take a break, and Holden has been the perfect place for me to be. I was born and raised in southern Minnesota, Lakeville, Minnesota, a very small town.
That's where my daughter lives.
Lives in Lakeville now? Probably a newly transplanted. Yeah. When I grew up, it was about 12,000 people, mostly a farming community with a very small one-street downtown area. Right now, it's probably about 40,000 people, and they're building a new downtown.
Wow.
However that works. So it's not much of home anymore, but all of my family is there, so it's still definitely home. Graduate from Winona State University in southern Minnesota. I have a Bachelor of Arts. I studied psychology and speech and theater arts and social work. And so my training and certification and all is as a social worker. An active member of my home parish in Milwaukee, Cross Lutheran Church, is what I consider my church home. So in the midst of all of that, I am also an openly gay man, and I always try to differentiate between just being a gay man and an openly gay man. But I'm comfortable expressing myself as a gay man and engaging in conversation about that. And although that's not all of who I am, it certainly is an intrinsical part of who I am. So I think I've said enough. We'll just move around.
I'm Ginger Schultz. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I've lived in Alaska most of my life. I have several very dear friends who are gay. I have a couple of friends who may or may not be lesbian. I could care less. Mm-hmm. I certainly have no antipathies towards gay or lesbian people, and I have been very interested in the conversation about the church from St. Francis. And want to know more about it.
Okay. You can, just grab a chair and we'll open up our circle. If you have a particular question or what it is that brought you here today, share that. So, thanks.
I'm Kate Kurtzwick, and I'm from Seattle, and I was, born and raised in Seattle person. I work for the school district, and the gay and lesbian issues coming to the fore in the school district now about whether we should have literature in the library. I work in an elementary school, so that's been a big issue. I work with several gay and lesbian people, and I was just interested in coming.
Doesn't the school currently have information available?
No, and that's there was a grant that afforded the district to purchase material. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who chose the material, but of course then when it got to they have the material and there's controversy, so the district has pulled back again. And from what I understand, where it is now is each school will decide what and if will be in the libraries. Mm.
Doug Lineholtz, I'm pastor of a church in Seattle, and partly that is part of my interest. I think that it's an issue that the church probably tries to ignore, has ignored pretty successfully, but is being asked to look at it more seriously, and I think that would be typical of my personal approach to it too, has been I've had friends that are gay and have worked with HIV and AIDS people and kind of in somewhat close conversation and encounters. But yet, as far as the congregation's life, it's almost like the desire for peace outweighs the willingness to face the challenge of dealing with it. And then on top of that, I guess it's my own personal sense of right and wrong. I grew up in that age when it was, that issue was, the gay issue was part of a morality issue, and I'm still sorting that out, and very glad the issue was present this week so I could, because I probably wouldn't seek it out mm-hmm. and get hit blindsided at some point and need to know more and want to know more. So.
I'm Mary Leinholt and I'm in Seattle also. I think my interests, I've had a lot of friends that I've worked with and I've just really enjoyed very much. Had a good friend who died of AIDS, and I'd be interested in hearing like what other church denominations besides Lutheran, you know, because I think I've dealt with it earlier in relation to church and all. So I don't know if everybody's Lutheran here, but I'd be interested in hearing that.
How is your do you have a home church?
In Seattle, mm-hmm. Magnolia. Mm-hmm.
Where is that church at?
Western side of Seattle.
I mean, where, as far as on the game?
Oh,
media,
that's how we answer that.
But that's a good literal way.
Yeah, but it's even funnier because I just moved there because I don't even really know.
you know
where it is.
You can't answer either.
Where
either
I'm like,
God. He doesn't know the answer either.
I don't know. Either way, I don't know. I just got there.
Okay. Good answer, Mary.
My name is Chrissy Perry. I'm from Southbridge, Connecticut. Came to the meeting last week, and I've been very thankful of everyone who was at the meeting last week. And really, my opinions have really progressed well. You know, I'm really glad about that. And so I'm just coming again because I won't get the chance to come again.
My name is Stephen Mackey, and I'm from Massachusetts. And I'm going to be a pastor in the church, in Missouri Synod, or ELCA, I'm not sure at this point. And I've had to, you know, look at this issue because my brother's gay. And someone going into the church and serving people and serving God, I have to figure out how can I serve God in the best capacity and being more, you know, the most inclusive I can. So right now I'm kind of looking at the issues, and I've grown up in a very conservative background, and like the morality part of the issue is tough for me to deal with, and how can I grow an understanding and figure out where I'm supposed to be in the ministry. That's why I'm here.
I'm Joyce Hendrickson from Seattle, and we in our congregation we have at least one openly gay male who is just a kick and, you know, loved by all and assimilated by all. It's not an issue. I work with several gays and lesbians, and this, having also been from a more conservative upbringing, why it's, I have appreciated in the work situation, you know, to get to know these folks as folks, you know, because there's, in the conservative background, people seem so worried about what happens in the bedroom, and for the most part, that's a very small part of their life, isn't it? So I'm just happy to hear.
I'm Ron Osborne from Hamilton, Montana. I live in a community that's becoming more and more conservative all the time. Mm-hmm. Southern Baptists are moving in, and there are more and more hate groups forming. And I don't mean only the militia, that's there too. And I come here every year to become fortified more and more in my scriptural background and understandings. And 10 years ago when I was here, I appreciate your comment earlier, Tim, about we can be comfortable here, we can talk about it, we can open it up. 10 years ago when I was here for my first year on the staff, I met Jim DeLange. And I chased him around like a puppy dog because I said, hey, there's lots of these things I don't know, I don't understand, I want to know. And Jim turned my life around in terms of my understanding of the gay and lesbian issues. And ever since then, I've been reading, I've been understanding, and I've known Tim for a couple of years now, become good friends with Dan Spencer and Anita Hill, and a few of the most wonderful Christian people I know. And I'm concerned about the justice issues, the injustice that's expressed toward gay and lesbian people. And I want to be fortified myself so that I can confront some of the people in my own congregation and some of the more conservative people with facts. And the more I come to these sessions, the more I learn, the more comfortable I feel. So thank you, Tim.
Thanks. I'm Dick Lohman. I'm a pastor serving in a congregation in a suburb of Minneapolis in Bloomington. I'm working there part-time, 15, 20 hours a week. Keep out of my wife's hair and keep out of mischief. About 11 years ago.
Pardon? You're probably in a Lakeville then.
Yes, in Lakeville, very well. About 11 years ago, our son came to us and told us he was gay, and I was caught blindsided, had absolutely no inkling. He had so many friends who were girls, and yet he's a fine man of faith. And I have just learned a lot of things, you know, that I as a heterosexual had no idea. My wife and I serve on a joint committee between Minneapolis and St. Paul Synods on ministry to, with, and for gay lesbians and their family and friends. And we have a support group for them once a month and create another safe place for families. And we have somebody coming in from 150 miles out because they can't talk in their small town. And so this has been a great experience.
Is that a PFLA group?
No, it's not.
It's not PFLA.
No, it's a Lutheran group. The feeling on the part of our joint committee between two synods felt that PFLA is doing an excellent job, but they wanted to have a Lutheran group so that Lutheran young people, or parents of Lutheran young people who are gay, have a place to go and say, you know, what is the church saying? What is the church doing about this? And personally, I'm very optimistic about the future, even though I call it birth pangs. There's a lot of hollering and screaming before the baby's born.
Are most everyone familiar with PFLA?
No.
PFLA's, the letters stand for Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. And it's a nationwide group. I've got some information on the table about them, but in most major cities, there are PFLA support groups where parents and family members of lesbians and gays can go and just ask questions and learn from the stories that have unfolded for other families. So when a son comes out or a brother comes out, and it's a shock and you don't know where to go and you're looking for a safe place to talk about it, you can get a hold of PFLAG and find resources there and support. We're widening our circle even more.
Just came in behind right there.
Oh, okay. We're just going around the circle and introducing ourselves and giving a little bit of information about where we're at, our knowledge or our experience with gay and lesbian issues, and then perhaps some questions that we have, and of course anyone's welcome to pass if they'd rather not speak. So.
Hi,
I'm
Erin Hanks, and I'm from New York, and I just came here because this issue's everywhere. It's everywhere, especially around where I live, and I was interested in the conversations.
Are you here with the youth group?
Yes.
How is it being experienced or talked about, or can you say that it's everywhere?
Well, I mean, mostly, you know, people I know and in the media and everywhere, because around the city and stuff, and just publicized a lot, so.
What town are you from?
Westchester County.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Barnstable.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know folks that are openly gay and lesbian?
I think I know a couple, actually, some that are my age.
Uh-huh.
And besides that, I think, that's mostly people my age.
My name is Anna Nelms. I'm in Bethlehem, Connecticut, right near Tufts, so I know that area. I have quite a few friends and family friends and stuff that are openly gay, and I also have I live in a very small town with a lot of people who are very, very homophobic. So I have both sides of the spectrum. I just came to gain a little perspective and awareness and anything else that would be helpful.
My name is Kevin Reardon, and I was born and raised in the Los Angeles area. In the last several months, I fell in love with a man. And so I wouldn't, before that, have identified myself as gay. But now I guess I would. And so I'm here to hear what other people are saying, and I told my parents just about 2 months ago, and they're having trouble hearing that, so I'm interested to hear more perspectives from parents and other family members.
I'm Maxine Lilly from Seattle. And I come from a generation that this was just not something we talked about. Mm-hmm. And it certainly is a very upfront issue now. And I hear more and have a better understanding.
Do you know any folks that are openly?
Yes. I lived in a mental health clinic for many years, and both staff and clients. And then there was a lot of conflict there, too. And the whole idea of gender dysphoria being a psychiatric disability, and now that it's being really challenged, too. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm Jean Mitz. I'm from City, Michigan. And I have several gay friends. And also a transvestite who's having trouble right now dealing with that. His family especially is having trouble with that. As a wife, and he, she, whatever Trish wants to call herself, as a wife and two children who right now are, oldest one is a teenager, and the family has kind of decided to separate. The children aren't really, even though this person was a primary caregiver, it's very difficult for the family right now. And I am trying to understand this situation, so I just came to learn more about things.
Do we need to do a clarification on terminology, transvestites? Perhaps could you just give us a kind of your understanding of...
Trish, I think it was the father figure in the family, name was Michael, now would like to be a female, has been taking hormones, and prefers to be referred to as a female.
Transvestite is often a person who would say that they felt all their life that they've been the opposite sex than what their body is. So a man who says, I've always felt, my image has been of myself as a woman. Or a woman who says, I've always felt myself a man. I'm in the wrong case. I'm in the wrong body. So it's an issue that's different than the gay and lesbian issue, but it's a sexual minority. So in that way, there's a lot of similarity. But they wouldn't say that they were gay or lesbian, so that's a difference in terminology, just for an explanation. Thanks.
I'm Susie Reynolds, I'm from Seattle. I have a son who is not homophobic, but very nearly, and I would simply like to be able to talk to him about this. I'm not feeling for what I understand, they feel what I'm saying. I think a lot of people in our generation have more understanding and want to really understand how you feel. Mm-hmm. So,
how old is your son?
He's 28. And he's very vocal and a very strong personality. And he's a child and a wife. And, you know, he's a nice kid, but he's very
prejudice.
Where do you think that comes from? Where does the fear, the anger, the...
No, I have no idea. He's kind of macho. Well, he's pretty macho. You know, he's been a muscle builder. And he's real straight. I mean, he just, you know, wants to be a suit, wants to be rich, wants all that stuff. And, sorry.
It's okay, we're glad.
My other son's a gypsy.
Family reunions are just a ball.
Yeah, that's hard when those gypsy two boys are together. It's real tough. And actually, I'm afraid that issue may come up and be really... my other son is not gay, as far as I know, but if the conversation were to come up, it would be
a difficult one.
Yeah, really hard.
I'm Clayton Ramsey. I'm a lawyer in Seattle. But before practicing law in Seattle, I went to school in New Orleans and practiced law in New Orleans for a number of years. And was exposed to a very active gay life, but it was one that was a stereotypical gay man, more than the flaming fag, and objects of ridicule, which I really never thought much about. And then, I guess over the years, I've seeing that it's more than just a moral issue, and there's more to it than that. And like the gentleman from Montana, I see it as a justice issue, and that's my principal interest in it. And it's something that I think I could, at some point, help somebody with if I knew more about gay and lesbian lifestyle. And that's the reason I'm here.
Thanks.
I'm Deborah Ramsey. I'm from Seattle, Washington, and married to this guy. So I live in New Orleans also, and I guess two comments. One, yes, we lived quite a while there and went to college there, and I guess that was my first exposure to gay and lesbians, both in school and in the community, and frankly, it's... I never had a problem with it. I mean, there are a lot of my friends, not a lot, but I had, you know, friends that were both gay and lesbian. But I think what I wanted to say was, because of my age, I grew up in the South and had to deal with, you know, the racial issues of that time in the 50s and 60s. And then somewhat of the feminist issues later on, you know, in my beginning with my college life, and now we have a daughter who's 24, and she's very much into feminist and gay and lesbian issues. So I'm coming to it for education, and I look at it also, I mean, to me it's very much a justice issue. And I just want to learn more.
I'm David Potty, and maybe like Kevin, I've only been out for, I'm now, I guess, openly out gay man, although I'm not at work, but I work for an oil company, and you know, you're not gay in an oil company. I guess the key issue that always comes up for me is the question, is it a choice? People ask me, have I really chosen to be this way? Usually, a lot of people ask, you know, so why would I choose this? But I think the question I come back with is, has anyone really chosen to be heterosexual? You know, did you ever think when you were 9 or 10 or 11, 12 years old, whenever that happened in a person, did you ever actually go through a decision process of saying, well, I think I'm going to be heterosexual? And the answer, of course, is usually no. You just kind of start feeling things for the opposite sex. And I look back on my life, and that's exactly what happened. I just started feeling things, feeling affection for the same sex when I was very, very young. Probably, you know, I don't know, nine, 10 years old, in a very, positive way. And the thing is, I never acted on that, though. I went through high school, college, and didn't really date anyone. Met a wonderful woman my senior year. And we fell in love for all the right reasons, in that, well, I loved her and got along well with her, and we ended up getting married, and had two wonderful children, and we were married for 10 years. But it was never really what I ever wanted in terms of a sexual feeling. There was always something missing. And for her as well. It just wasn't, she had that sexual experience before we'd been married, and I guess I couldn't do the same thing for her that she had been using. I grew up Missouri Synod, and I absolutely, sex before marriage is absolutely wrong. And so I never had any experience outside of our marriage, and had a really wonderful marriage, but you know, no shouting and screaming, but there was just something missing. And so 5 years ago, we went through counseling, and finally ended up getting a divorce. And then about a year and a half ago, I met someone really wonderful, and we've been now living together for about a year. So, background.
And the boys are with you?
And the boys are here.
My name is Helsa Peterson. I'm a bisexual woman who came out at about age 30. I ended up in a relationship for 11 years with another woman. And through that relationship, we had a son who was now 8 years old. We came here as a family on long-term staff last fall. But our relationship broke up in the spring, and so we're now living separately. Judy has moved back to Seattle, where we're from, and Devin and I will be staying here. Somebody was asking about the churches and what some of the other churches are doing. I grew up with a wide variety of backgrounds. My father was the head of the Council of Churches in Seattle for 10 years, and so we did lots of ecumenical stuff throughout my growing up period.
Of which denomination? Ecumenical would be.
Right. I mean,
see what I'm learning already?
Right.
Sorry.
We attended Catholic churches and Jewish synagogues and all the different Protestant denominations. But I have belonged to, as an adult, both a Congregational church and also we joined a Methodist church when I was pregnant with our son. Because the church we joined had a reconciling congregation. Now that's their kind of equivalent. It's a little bit different because it's not a separate, as I understand, the Lutheran thing is sort of a separate organization, and churches can choose to be reconciled in Christ. The Methodist, it's under the framework of the church. But my father is a member of a large congregational church in Seattle, and theirs is called Open and Affirming. And that particular church has declared themselves Open and Affirming. So there are a number of churches in Seattle that have gone through this process. But I understand there's no Lutheran churches that have that kind of reconciling.
Oh, I think.
Oh, okay. So
Central,
somebody
Central.
Was saying today that there weren't.
For sure.
I don't know.
In Seattle?
Central Lutheran.
There's a directory over there.
Okay.
That some of the things that Helsa's referring to, maybe I'll just jump in and clarify a little bit. The different terminologies, if a church becomes open and affirming or reconciled, it basically means that they're making a statement that their congregation is open for gays and lesbians to become full participating members of their congregation, just like everybody else. Within the Lutheran Church, well, next to the Lutheran Church, sort of, there's a group called Lutherans Concerned, and they're a pan-Lutheran group of gays and lesbians and friends of gays and lesbians, and they have worked since 1976 to educate and nurture the church and challenge the church to look at issues of gays and lesbians. And they have a program called Reconciled in Christ, and they challenge individual congregations to become a Reconciled in Christ congregation. So if they do that, they've made a public statement that they're open to gays and lesbians. And there's a publication through Lutherans Concerned called The Concord, and it's also over on the table, And that publication lists all of the congregations in the United States and Canada which are reconciled in Christ. There's about 150 now that have made that statement. My home church in Milwaukee is a reconciled in Christ congregation. Fullness of God, which is the congregation here at Holden Village, is an RIC, or a reconciled in Christ congregation. So if you have more questions about that, we could...
Mm-hmm. I just have a really good question, and I don't mean to cut you off, Robin. Does that mean that you can, that it's not, that it's through ordination as well, not just through members?
No. A reconciled in Christ congregation, it would be making reference to membership.
Not to ordination.
But not to ordination. The ordination falls under the larger church's policy, the ELCA's policy, which basically states, well, I'll let that conversation unfold in just a moment or so, actually.
You know what's going to be wrong.
Well, I don't know. Sorry. If it doesn't, I'll talk about it more. How's that? But all of that information is also available over there. So, I'm sorry, I'll send myself, cut you off, so you may have more to say.
Not really. If we end up getting into church, talk a little more. Church in Seattle, what happened? That's not part of introductions.
Thanks.
My name is Robin, I was here for the conversation last week, and the way I started my introduction seemed pretty helpful to me, which was to say, well, I'm Robin, and I'm a woman, and I'm German-American, and so that makes me white in our culture. I like to play drums. I'm kind of short, and I was a teacher for 3 years, and among the many list of things that are a part of who I am, I, over the last number of years, have also come to understand that I am a lesbian woman. Some of the things about me can be seen or come up naturally in conversation, and other things are less visible. And I also have gone to attended seminary for the last 4 years, and have recently graduated from seminary just in May. And during the course of that time in seminary, this was something that I began to understand more about myself. Prior to that, it had been pretty much, repressed or suppressed, I'm not sure what the right word is. Also didn't really date, and just worked my butt off all the time. it was after getting into seminary in Berkeley. That this began to become a little bit more obvious to me. And it was very wonderful, but simultaneously very, very painful and difficult to be in seminary preparing for ordained ministry, and basically preparing for something that I was conscious of an institution that would not let me or would not want me to do that if that institution knew fully who I was. So I was very, very closeted for most of the time in seminary. And I went on internship in Portland, Oregon, and had a wonderful internship at an inner city type congregation there. It was wonderful on many levels, but the one level where it wasn't okay for me was just beginning to realize what a toll it was taking on me personally to basically keep this secret, to keep part of myself walled off. And I know this is something that many people, maybe who are heterosexual, haven't even thought of, how much we carry, our sexuality just as natural parts of who we are. A week and a half ago, we had conversations about the Holden Village, about the whole, what was that movie called, about Can Men and Women Be Friends?
When Harry met Sally.
Can men and women be friends? And you're just natural kinds of things like that come up, and it's kind of like, wow, that's not exactly my question. And just so many ways where you just pull yourself away, you pull yourself out of conversations and out of relationship with people. And I began to realize that as a person who is trying to call people into more openness and fullness in their relationship with God, that I simultaneously was not being able to do that. And people were picking up on that in various ways, and I was getting this kind of feedback that I hadn't gotten before in my life about being kind of difficult to get to know, whereas so many other people had always told me it was pretty easy to get to know, and now I'm difficult to get to know. You know, what does that mean? Otherwise, the internship went really well, and I got, but I got back to seminary and decided that I couldn't do ordained ministry in that way. And so I thought very seriously and was actually planning on pulling out of the process towards ordained ministry during the fall of this past year. But over the months that I was contemplating that, I never had this kind of, you know, that gut level spiritual sense that yes, this is what we need to do. And it was about a month before the final step in the process, which is called the approval interview, that that I basically decided, okay, if I'm still feeling called to do this, and it's somebody else or something else out there that is saying no, then why am I the one who's getting ready to take myself out of the process? If it's somebody else's no, why have I internalized that no and I'm now saying it to myself? Which, I mean, there are so many people who I met along the way who just dropped out of the process over this issue. I mean, it's just not coming up as much because people are self-selecting out. So I decided that I would go ahead and go through the final step of the process and be honest, recognizing that that was probably going to mean that I would be denied approval. It's kind of a long story from that point, which I won't go into, but I'm happy to talk about it if anyone wants to know more about it. I was honest with the panel that interviewed me. They went back to the full committee. The full committee, as I understand it, nearly voted for denial, but tabled it for that particular meeting after lots and lots of conversation, decided that they needed to meet with the faculty of the seminary, drove up the hill to meet with the faculty. So at this point, anyone who I had not made some big public stand at seminary, but when the candidacy committee's driving up the hill to meet with the faculty of the seminary, it becomes more obvious. They had that meeting. The faculty stood behind me 100%, but said, you know, it's not our job to enforce the church's policy. And the policy of the ELCA right now is that, I think the statement is, ordained ministers who are homosexual in their self-understanding are expected to abstain from homosexual sexual activity. And I had said that for a variety of reasons, theological, personal, and justice reasons, that wasn't okay with me. And I wouldn't say that I would seek to live my life in compliance with that. After the faculty basically stood behind me but said, we don't have to enforce this policy, you do, then they invited me to come to their full meeting of about 20 people on the full candidacy committee. And so I went to that meeting in March. And the result of that was that they decided to approve me, surprisingly enough. Basically, I think things were understood in such a way that because I am not in a committed or married type relationship right now, I guess we all kind of decided, I guess, that that was okay. It's still kind of confusing to me how we kind of got to that point. They approved me, but it's still a very difficult place to be because I recognize that if I were in, you know, in the this wonderful relationship that would, you know, give my life all of this meaning, that I wouldn't be approved right now. And that if at some point, even if I am a pastor in a congregation and that happens, that if I don't seek to hide that, which I'm not and wouldn't plan on doing, then I'm not okay anymore to be somebody's pastor, even though relationally I probably have a whole lot more to offer to a lot of other people. My own questions, I suppose, of the process that I'm in right now. I just got assigned to Western Iowa, of all places, as a synod, trying to figure that out for myself. And also, I've never made some kind of a step to say, okay, I'm an openly lesbian woman now. I've gotten more open about that, but I'm still not sure what that means to be openly. What does that mean, you know, really? My questions are just around, I think, how people find out, how is the most helpful? Conversations like this, I think, are helpful. There's a congregation in Portland that I was an intern at who, by and large, I don't think know this, and how to bring that you know, to up with them in a helpful way, as opposed to them finding out probably from somebody else, which I think would be most helpful. And I'm open to talking more about any of that with anybody.
Thanks. Can I just add that I know I came late, but here I came, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Just introduce yourself and just let us know.
I do want to pick up on what you said, though. My name is Mari Irvin. I'm an openly identified lesbian, member of St. Francis Lutheran in San Francisco, but a faculty member at the University of the Pacific in Southern California. I really want to pick up on what Robin has to say and probably encourage you, and if I may make my little commercial announcement, which you may have heard at lunchtime, after the Vespers service this evening, Jim DeLine and I will meet as board members. I'm co-chair, and Jim is a board member of Lutheran Lesbian Gay Ministries, which is a national organization whose primary function is to support people such as Robin, who are called to ministry, who are openly identified, who wish to respond to that call. And so our responsibility is to help folks such as Robin find a call. That's our primary focus. Our secondary focus is to be active in the polity stuff. And but our primary function is to raise money to support pastors who are coming out, many of them. And for all the reasons you've identified, the violence to one's integrity, the violence to a person called by God to be required to lie, to deceive. Mm-hmm. If you think about that, it's just bizarre. So we're meeting in the fireside room this evening. If any of you be interested in hearing more about our work, we'd like to come.
And there's information available, so on the table.
I guess we're in Creekside rather than, I don't know, we're someplace around.
Yeah. Someplace.
In terms of my own life, I lived my life for the first 40-some years the way I was supposed to. I went to St. Olaf, I graduated, I married, I have two children. I denied what I knew about myself vigorously because I wouldn't be that kind of a person. And at about the age of 40-some, my husband was in more than the early stages of multiple sclerosis. His impending disability and the implications of that for our family and for our relationship had reached the point that I could no longer ignore the issues of my homosexuality. So in a curious way, through the process of his illness, I had to come into my own identity. And so that kind of began about 25 years ago. There's a lot of stuff in 25 years. One of the promises that I made to myself early on, because in the 70s, when I first began to really think, I've got to deal with this, I've really got to deal with this, I didn't even really know how to do it. And you kind of find your way. And one of the promises that I made to myself in this is that I would be out to my children, who at that point were in college. And primarily from the standpoint that I could not be who I was to them. And I didn't know what the price of that would be, but I just knew that I could not do that. So very, very timidly, over a period of a couple of years, I came out to both of my sons, who each in his own way was marvelously accepting, but each story is a funny one and strange. But and I came out to all the members of my family except to my mother. And that has been was a much longer process. I just feel very strongly that living a life of integrity requires to be who I am. And not to scream it out, but not to whisper it, any more than those of us who are heterosexual scream it out or whisper it, we live our lives. And I think that's basically it.
Thanks.
I just really wish
that it is the people, which is Robin and the other people in seminary, who have everything telling them and pushing on them to keep quiet. It is, I am absolutely convinced, it's through their courage that this whole issue will change. It will not change through policies, it will not change because we are good meaning people, it will change. When the church begins to see that there are hundreds and hundreds of pastors whom they value immensely, who are gay and lesbian and bisexual.
Just sort of open it up for conversation and questions. I think one intriguing mix that I heard was this call to justice and wanting to look at this as a justice issue and move forward, but still questions about gay and lesbian issues on a morality sort of level. And how do we talk at the same table when we're looking at the issue in a different way, maybe?
I think one of the things that frustrates me, Tim, at home is I can find a half a dozen people in our congregation where we can have a conversation on this. And I remember when the sexuality report came out from the ELCA, and my wife and I walked into this meeting room, and there were 40 people sitting there, and I knew we were alone. Mm-hmm. Absolutely alone. We wanted to talk about this, and these people were so bigoted and so biased. I think one of the things that has helped me, and I haven't come to grips with facing people with it in a controversial setting yet, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. We need, when we talk about morality, we need to go back to the scriptures. And there are several books that I've read recently that have been tremendous help to me. One, of course, was Mel White's book, Stranger, The Stranger of the Gate, which is marvelous. But the other, Engaging the Powers by Walter Wink, has a wonderful chapter in there about the homosexual issue and addresses it scripture by scripture. And so does Peter Gomes' book, The Good Book, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. And there are more, but those are my three of my more recent readings. And I want to fortify myself with what scripture says so that we can say, hey, this is... The immorality is the indecency, the injustice, the homophobia. That's the injustice. Now, that's the immoral part of this, because Scripture does not condemn gays and lesbians.
I think what Gomes does in his book on building the issue on race, having lived in the South, and what he does with the issues of women. I think both of those, the foundation that he lays in there is, I've never seen anything better than that particular issue. It does a marvelous job. The other thing that I think is difficult for a lot of heterosexuals is that, and I say this to our son, I don't understand that. I don't understand your attraction. And he'll say, well, I don't understand yours. And I think to respect someone else's feelings is crucial to understanding or to coming to terms with acceptance of who we are as individuals. There was a time when we as Lutherans didn't accept the Catholics and didn't accept the Methodists and the Presbyterians, and we've come to find out that we're all part of the family of God. On a moral issue, I always quote my wife and I have spoken in probably 20 different adult forums and congregations, Stephen ministers programs, and so on. And one of the things I'll do is to lay out the fact that we're not defending the flamboyant. No. We're not defending immorality. We're not defending any of that stuff. In fact, I always quote the story about Cal Coolidge. President Coolidge was called Silent Cal. And he went to church one day, and his wife, for some reason, couldn't go, and he came back, and she said, well, what was it about? He said, sin. Nothing more was said, and finally she said, well, what did he say about it? He's against it. And I think we have to be very clear as a church that we're against immorality of any kind, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual. I certainly wouldn't want to be judged as a heterosexual by the immorality that goes on at the Mardi Gras by heterosexuals. They all do that, don't they? No, they don't. And I said, be very clear about that. The other thing about choice, I think that this is not a choice. I think that people just, you are, we are. And who would be foolish enough to be, want to be a part of a persecuted and hated minority?
Right.
I mean, that's, pardon me, that's dumb. Nobody would do that.
And the lifestyle that each of us lives is a choice. Of
sure.
course, so there isn't a gay or lesbian lifestyle.
No, not at all.
There are gays and lesbians that are gypsies, and there are gay and lesbians that are hoping to be rich and all those other things you said, Jameson. You know, that there isn't a particular lifestyle, but that it takes some efforts to sort of move past our understanding of stereotypes and our fears of the unknown. But to sit with the reality that everyone in this room knows someone who's gay and lesbian. You work with gay and lesbian folks. You have gay and lesbian folks in your family. You have gay and lesbian folks at your church. And so the question becomes, why is it that perhaps I don't know openly someone who's gay or lesbian? Is it something about me? Do I present myself as not a person that's trustworthy or that's, you know? And so then it becomes a self question more than it becomes a question out there, but that there is, you can't pick them out of a crowd.
I was just going to jump in there and talk about stereotypes, because I know I had this stereotypical impression of what I thought someone who was gay was, and I did not identify with that. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel comfortable that, you know, I thought I knew what someone who was gay was like. Mm-hmm. Well, very simple, you know, they're back in the mid-70s, which is probably when I would have come out, if I'd come out in my teens, you know, any image I had was what I consider very immoral, very negative. Certainly not a stereotype of anyone I would ever identify with publicly, and actually even privately. It just wasn't me. And that's part of, I think, the changing face of gays and lesbians is that we are more, you know, just people who you know, doctors and lawyers, and in my case, a chemical engineer. But I'm still not comfortable to be out of work, you know, because I still feel that if I was out of work, I would move my career. And just like if I was a woman for a major oil company, I'd probably be limiting my career that way as well. So there's very much an issue between feminism and gay and lesbianism, you talked about that earlier. There really is a glass ceiling there's a glass ceiling for blacks in major companies, there's a glass ceiling for women, and there's no glass ceiling for gays and lesbians because most, they don't have to know. But it does become more of one of respectability and kind of issues that come up Monday morning, you know, well, what do you do for the weekend? And, you know, it's funny how often, my issue comes up, like I've been in a relationship for a year now, and no one at work knows it. And it can be pretty challenging covering that up.
I think the whole issue of coming out is such a complex issue, because I think Carter Hayward made a tape once on coming out as a life, which really dealt with coming out as an everyday choice that's made many times often during the day. As to not only, it isn't an either or, it's how out are you? Mm-hmm. And it's a choice that I find myself making literally every day, if not more than once a day, in terms of how you present yourself in conversations, in discussions, in just the ordinary kind of stuff with folks who don't know you. Mm-hmm. Discussions with people on the boat coming down today. You mentioned, I just heard you talking, mentioning your sons, where do they live? And then the next question, are you a widow? Well, the simple answer to that is yes. But so I stopped there. In this situation, I did. I stopped there. But that's just the basic question. Am I a widow? Well, immediately, technically. This is always going on. It's a gradual, when I was in a relationship for 12, 15 years, after I came out, we made a promise that we would not live deceptively, but we would live privately. Do you hear the distinction? So that we lived, we bought a home together, we lived in that home, people who knew us came to our home. If you looked around, it would become very clear that this was a couple, not two people sharing a house. But we didn't, make a big deal out of it. Seems very appropriate. So again, you're always making decisions. In certain situations, I am outrageously out. In other situations, I'm quiet. So it's not like living in the heterosexual world where everybody makes the assumption that you are. And if you aren't married, it's because you chose not to be.
Part of the challenge of this conversation and the ongoing conversation is that heterosexuals get a chance to also come out daily in regards to gay and lesbians. And it's amazing when you start expressing that, even that you've got questions, but start using the word gay and lesbian, bisexual, every now and then. When I came out to my family, my sister just thought, well, she's never going to have anyone to talk to about this. I don't know anyone who's gay or lesbian. Anyone that is anyone that knows anyone that's even, like you're the only one in the Midwest. But, and her step, bless her heart, was to begin confronting gay jokes. Mm-hmm. That they were just no longer funny to her. Mm-hmm. And so she started to tell people, I don't think that's funny. I have a brother who's gay. And suddenly, even in Lonsdale, Minnesota, a little town just next to Northfield, as she started confronting more and just sort of talking more openly, suddenly, friends are coming, I have a brother who's gay, my daughter thinks she might be lesbian. And suddenly, there were lots of people, and folks are looking for safe people and places to talk about this with. And if you can do some signaling, if you can let people know that you've got some information, or at least you've got some level of comfort about talking about this, then you can do those same steps. And by all means, I hope that you will use me in that way. You can leave Holden and talk about, well, there was this guy up at Holden did this session on gay and lesbian issues. So that was really interesting. And see where that goes, but if people are looking for places to converse in your church and in your work, in your family, that's really, really important to let people know that it's okay. And for me, and I always try to make this point at each of the conversations, is that it really is a matter of life and death that this conversation go on, and that it goes on in the open. Because gay and lesbian teenagers are killing themselves every day. And a gay and lesbian teenager is 6 times more likely to commit suicide.
30% of all suicides between the ages of 18 and I think it's 24 are documented. To be by individuals who knew themselves to be gay or lesbian.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Yep.
As a heterosexual, and you have a friend who you think you know fairly well, and you suspect that they're gay or lesbian, but that particular conversation has never come up, mm-hmm. How do you, or how do I, as a heterosexual, make it comfortable enough, or do you come out and just ask? I mean, help me. That's my question.
I would say, why hasn't it come up, and what has been your part in it not coming up? It could be anything from the phrasing of questions. I mean, to what have you done this weekend? Are you making the assumption that they're heterosexual in your questions, or do you make the assumption that they may not be?
I'm making, and with this one particular person I have in mind, I've made the assumption that he's gay. I may be wrong, mm-hmm. I don't know. But I have not had the courage to, I've let, like you say, like, gardening, I'm wondering if there's someone helping you with the gardening, you know? But I just never, I don't know. Helping, that's why.
One of the things that I just jumped in, and one of the things that I first noticed, like when I first came out, and okay, I went to some, you know, people were either gay and lesbian, mainly gay men. One of the things I really noticed is there's some very, very feminine acting gay men, but there are also some very, very straight acting gay men. And the one thing I learned is that, and then I've also met a lot of, there's one guy at work who, you know, a gay group was supposed to know other gay people. Boy, I thought, I mean, this guy, he's 35, single, never married, he's very, very feminine. And I just assumed he was gay.
Well,
and I confronted him on it.
Yeah.
And he's not, he's straight.
Yeah.
He's had a girlfriend for years.
I don't mean to make this, you know, maybe I made it sound funny, because this person is not a feminist. It's just that, you know, my husband likes gardening too. I mean, it's just a common, you know. No one's answered the question for me yet. I mean, do I say something?
I can try at it.
Really?
From the standpoint that I think part of me would say ask him, but another part of me says there's a greater cost to him in answering, or there may be a greater cost to him in asking than there is in you in asking.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'd have to ask, what's your reason for wanting to like that person?
What difference is it?
Does it really matter, in other words?
Right.
Right, in other words, to out another person, or to out a person that doesn't want to be out,
yeah,
is a horrible thing to do to a person. Because that person feels then very vulnerable, and it's very painful.
Well, I guess when I was, you know, listening to people talk, and also thinking, kind of harking back to the issue of race and us out and growing up, and, you know, I feel like if gay and lesbian people were more open, and that you knew that all these people were gay and lesbian, then there would be more accept. It's kind of like the black issues in the South growing up. It was always so closeted. I mean, they lived on the other side of the tracks. You never, you know, you didn't have the same water fountains. You never thought about it because it was so, that's the way it was, and that's the way it always will be. And it wasn't until they brought the issues to the forefront and identified themselves. I mean, that's maybe not a good example because they're obviously have a different color of skin, but, you know, they just didn't put themselves out there.
Because of fear.
Because of fear and
persecution.
You know, right.
So,
I guess what I was saying was, if people knew that you were gay, and they went, well, you know, he's just a regular kind of guy.
Yeah. That's the catch-22. It'll just take time to work itself out. I mean, if everyone who's gay or lesbian turned purple overnight, this but it wouldn't end the hatred.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't begin the hatred.
Well, if you were ordained, if you were Ross Merkel in Oakland, California, and you had been with a well-established congregation for 12 years that highly values you, if you have the model Lutheran Church in the Sahara Pacific Synod, which Ross probably has in many, many ways, and if you suddenly some Sunday say, you know, I can't do this anymore, and you announce to your congregation that you're gay, guess what? Charges are brought against you, and you are thrown out of the clergy. With the good ending of this story is that Ross's congregation said, well, he's still our pastor. And the synod chose not to take actions against the congregation. It's just that they have now an officially vacant congregation. But again, Ross, because of his integrity, because he said, I'm gay. You people love, I mean, Ross is a model pastor. Ross has been a model pastor. Everyone has known, quote, everyone has known he was gay, but he said the word. So there's not a real high payoff for saying the word. And so I think that it's a little bit like requiring the person who's going to get hit in the mouth to
come up to get his. So, you know, but I think you're absolutely right that the visibility, you know, if there could be some Sunday morning when every gay and lesbian Lutheran stood up in the pew, this issue would be over real fast.
I like what Mel White says about that. He says if all of the gay musicians in the church were to not play on a Sunday morning, the church would be silent.
A couple of other comments.
A few years ago, I read some statistics that about 10% of the population is homosexual, and about 1% is transsexual. Does that fit with your information? But since then, when I've been in conversations where people have been a little uptight about homosexuality, in that group, I superimpose those percentages and figure, well, in my congregation on Sunday morning, I could we could have 12 homosexuals there, and you know, one of us, whatever, transsexuals, and you know, this possibility is there, and whatever you're in.
That might be true in the older, our generation, my generation, in that they've been closeted and never been able to come out. I don't think that'd be true in the younger generation because, sad to say, they've left the church. They're not there.
I have several gay friends, and I've known them for years. You know, we've been in each other's homes. We've socialized together for a long time, and yet never once has any of them ever said to me, I'm gay. I mean, they know that I know, and I know that they know that I know, but it's never, you know, it's never spoken.
And that's okay, too.
I want to respond, I forgot your name already.
Deborah.
Mm-hmm. To your initial question, too, that it seemed like Tim had some good suggestions about like what his sister has done, ways of signaling that it's okay to talk to you about that. You mentioned that you see it as a justice issue, and you know, if that's true, then I would say that openly you could respond to when you read things in the paper, which there have been lately about various legislation that is trying to be passed about, you know, various gay and lesbian issues, that you could respond openly to that, and that would be a signal. Or you know, responding negatively to jokes,
right,
things like that, and then that would signal to him that it's okay for him to tell you if that's what he wants to do.
Well, it's 5:00, and I just want to thank you all for being part of the conversation, and let it continue on, please.